First of all, let's talk about what's going on with the tour.
We just finished, I finished the record. We've been working on the record now for about four and a half months, which has been a lot more fun because the first two albums I made in about a month and a half. And it's always better to make a record where you can let it breathe and study it and come back maybe a week later and take another look at the track and do certain things over. So the tour just started. We just did the Gung Fu tour, as I call it, which is the Northern California tour, because the guy in Gung Fu is always on his way to Kung Fu. He's always on his way to Stockton or Petaluma or Eureka, which is all Northern California, which is a beautiful country. We just finished playing 4 or 5 dates up there. I went down to Los Angeles 2 days ago to remix a couple of cuts that I want a little bit more chugga-chugger in. And today's our first day in Philadelphia. We should be touring for 2.5 weeks. We end up playing Central Park. We sold it out. Well, I'm a New York boy, you know, which is a lot of fun. Then we sold out Los Angeles for 3 days, and then I've got 5 days off in between. I'm on tour constantly anyway, so it doesn't really make any difference to me. I live at the Holiday Inn, USA, you know.
What's the Central Park?
Central Park is the Dr. Pepper concert. We played it last year, and it went well enough that they asked us back. I love playing the East Coast anyway.
Though. I mean, that's outdoors in the park, set up a stage, and people gather around.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly. And they drink more than Dr. Pepper, too.
Okay, so you're on the road all the time then?
We're on the road. If I'm not on the road, I'm making records. If I'm not making records, I'm writing movie themes. If I'm not writing movie themes, I'm fighting with my girlfriend, so I prefer to be on the road, you know. But yeah, we tour a lot. I think that a rock and roll band should really, live is always better than a record. I mean, we make good records, and knock on wood, we've sold a lot, but I love playing live, you know. And it's great to see the world without being in the service again.
Rodney Dangerfield was just here about half an hour ago, and he was saying that I asked him what his favorite medium is. He said, I'd love to be out live, so that way you get the feedback. Does that make a difference?
It does. It's there's a lot more girls at the shows, you know, than there are in the recording studio. No, it's more fun live because I could be sarcastic and say, well, there's plenty of cold cuts in backstage. But no, before I was a recording artist, I was always a live entertainer anyway. And there's a lot of boys out there that never really get to make records. And I've seen some bands that have just completely knocked me out that have never made albums. And that's really what it's all about, isn't it? You know, playing for people.
What have you learned over the past couple of years since you've been in the business? What would you say to you?
How to write my phone numbers and code.
Why is that?
How to get an extra room at a Holiday Inn by taking a tube out of the TV set and saying it's broken and putting it back in later. How to get through airports and avoid Hare Krishnas. We've learned a lot. I mean, it was really great to see the world. We had a very successful tour of Japan and Australia, and it's really great to, like, I called my mother in Japan. I says, hey, Mom, guess what? I'm in Tokyo, and I didn't have to join the Air Force to get here, you know. We've traveled a lot. I've done a couple of movie themes. I've done a lot of live shows. I'm also producing myself some groups in San Francisco. I signed a group called The Beat to CBS Records and Bill Graham, who I think are very talented. I guess I've done a lot of things. I've been through a couple of romances and a couple of band members and a hell of a lot of airports, you know. I've had a lot of fun. I'm proud of the guys, and it's just really great, you know. In the last couple of years, I think I've also cleaned my act up a little bit too. It's like working 6-7 days a week. I really want to. It's really important to me that we always put on a great show, you know. And I'm an avid displayer of partying. I love to party. I think rock and roll beats working for a living. But I have to say that we've taken it one step further and looked at the show a little bit more professionally, you know, since we're doing a lot of headlining and stuff. But it's not like studying for, an algebra test or something. It actually comes natural. You just sustain a little bit more so you sound better and everybody looks better, and, you know, that kind of thing.
You're producing The Beat?
We're getting semi-pro now, you know. No, I didn't produce The Beat. Bruce Botnick produced The Beat, but I signed I introduced the Beat to CBS Records and to Bill Graham. Paul Collins has been a friend of mine for a long time.
Who are the people you're producing?
I'm producing a group called Back Road out of San Francisco. And I'm working with some other people whose names I'm not allowed to mention that are doing very well in Los Angeles, a band. One of the guys is the drummer, Bruce Gally, used to work with some of the guys from the Cream, and he's worked with the Neck and a couple of other people. Just some things on the side when I have time, you know. I'll probably let it all out of the bag in about 2 or 3 months when things happen, you know. It'll all be on the same label, I promise, gang.
You like reggae?
I love it, yeah. As a matter of fact, I used to open up Toots and the Maytals, who was one of my favorite singers, Toots. And I've played some saxophone on some reggae cuts before I became signed by CBS. And they spelt my name wrong, you know. Not that it made any difference to me. But I love reggae. And it's a lot of fun to sing because you're not singing on the 2 and the 4. You're singing on the 1 and the 3, and it's kind of like jazz singing. You can scat a lot more. You can play with the lyrics a lot more. And I don't know if it's a successful musical idiom in the United States or anything, but I took some chances, and we've got a reggae cut on the new album called Don't Come Running Back that was written by the rhythm guitar player from Toots and the Maytals. And a friend of mine originally did it from the Shakers. His name is Chris Solberg, who just finished doing a couple of tours with Santana and has worked with me and a lot of other people. He did it with a group called the Shakers for Electro Asylum that didn't go anywhere because reggae wasn't really catching on. I think it really caught on in Europe before it caught on here. But I've been doing it for a long time, and I love it. I think it's good.
I was reading about Money Madness, the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I love it. It's like a home movie to me. My parents hate it. I think my management's afraid of it. The record company doesn't know because I've got 5 different girlfriends in it and 3 different haircuts. Because it was made before I got signed by CBS and Bill Graham. It was kind of like the Cinderella of rock story because I was a man of 1,000 demos, so to speak. And Michael Mason, who used to play drums for me, decided to quit because he didn't want to play Love the One You're With anymore. This was back in 1973 or 74. I was working 6 days a week in some semi-top 40 club that let us play some original music. So he went back to college at San Francisco State and decided to make this movie about me, you know, a documentary on a rocker trying to make it to the top. And he was over and he interviewed my roadies and he flew to New York, interviewed my parents and my sisters and interviewed the management that was thinking about signing me. And it was really a coincidence for him because, you know, the first record smashed and the second one did really well. And all of a sudden Michael had this movie, you know, and it just kind of popped up. And it's been doing actually very well. I consider it a pretty true documentary art film, so to speak. And he's been mad at me lately because I haven't been pushing the movie, but I really haven't had time. But I don't know.
Well,
it's a good movie. It's a matter of fact, I originally put 2 tickets together in the studio, and he has it on film when I first was writing it. And he's got footage of me singing with my the guy. We were blackballed from the union because we didn't pay our dues or something. This was in the old days when we had no money. And we had the guy that was over for me to get my dues payment come over to the house. And I had him on piano playing "You Always Hurt the One You Love." You know, we had a couple of... We were feeling pretty good, and there's a lot of stuff in that movie. It's great, yeah.
You've done some other stuff with the Americathon.
Right, I did the Americathon. I thought the rough of that movie was a lot better. You know, the original, the Americathon, when it first came out, I saw a rough of it. I was on vacation on my way to Mexico, and they offered me this money to write this movie theme, and everybody else that writes into movies, I think, when they get involved, a lot of them just give outtakes of records and stuff like that. What I did is I wrote the theme to fit the movie. It was about the country running out of gas in about the 1990s. And there was a lot more cursing in it and stuff like that, which doesn't, you know, make a movie better or not, but it was a lot realer to me. It seemed like they cut it down for TV or something when it originally came out. But I was interested in it, and I wrote Get a Move On for it right before I went on vacation. As a matter of fact, I wrote it on vacation. And I came back and said, okay, here it is, and they liked it.
What other movie stuff have you done?
I was interested in doing some movie stuff for some films, but as it turned out, the stuff that I wrote for the movies, I wanted to do myself and not put it on. I'd rather not put all my eggs in one basket. You know, like I've been asked to do a couple of movies, but they always want me to play this guy in rock and roll. I mean, I'm in rock and roll for a living, and I love it. If I play a movie, I'd like to do like The Portrait of Dorian Gray or Citizen Kane or something I really like. I don't want to play a rock and roller in a movie. I'd rather just do that. I'd like to make it separate. They give me these movie scripts where the guy goes to L.A. and he goes to New York and he meets the bigwigs. I say, hey, I've been through that already. I don't want to replay something that had already happened, you know? I'm not ready to play, you know, Johnny Fast and the Cadillacs, you know? I mean, I've been through that, you know? But I'm interested in maybe doing some more movie stuff in the future. You know?
What about video?
I like video. I've got somebody that does David Bowie, and he's worked with the Boomtown Rats and a couple other people I like a lot. that I want to get together with him in Los Angeles, because I think that this new album I have is really geared for video, because there's a lot of stuff, the concept that I have in the new album is from a lot of personal experiences that I can easily portray through video, you know what I mean? Like, I wrote this song called Million Dollar Girl on the album, and it's kind of like, it portrays a musician that doesn't have a lot of money, because mostly I've been a musician for 14 years, and my whole reality was just, you know, dreaming of making it, making some bread, you know. You know, get back in the family album and maybe get back in my grandma's will, you know. I mean, something good had to happen to me, you know. There's enough bad stuff happening to me. So I figure if I put a lot of stuff on video, I could do like this verse called, "In a Cadillac, you don't look back. You don't see the street and all the things that you don't want to see. But you still see me." You know, it's a song about this guy that, you know, falls for this chick that's more or less into a prominent society scene. Kind of like a Jay Giles, Faye Dunaway type of situation, you know. And it's just great because you can do it on video. You can switch to the band, and then you can come back on the street with half a beard, walking by the jewelry store, you know, with a cigarette in your mouth like Ratso from, you know, Midnight Cowboy. There's a lot of things you can do with video. I'm very interested in it. Yeah.
Great. Is there anything else that you wanted to get into while we're rolling?
We've covered a lot of ground, you know.
Okay. Oh, one other thing I did want to... Two other things. Who is it that you're working with on the video?
The name of the guy I'm working with personally on the video, his name is Paul Flattery, but he works for another guy who has got his name on the head of the paper that probably is the boss or something, I don't know, but Paul's a friend of mine. He's a little English guy, and he's quite clever.
He's the one who worked with Bowie.
Yeah, he's worked with Bowie. His company did. I don't really know the name of the company, you know.
The other thing is, I'm building a file of these. I haven't had any on the air yet, but I'd like to know, if you would, your birth date and what kind of things you appreciate in a gift.
My birthday. Well, I'll tell you, my birthday is March 21st. I'm an Aries. I was born on the first day of spring. As a matter of fact, my brother, who's a cop, was born on the last day of summer. We're born 18 months apart exactly, and we're like day and night. I can't believe it. And I like musical instruments and gift-wrapped. I like anything in a package, you know. Well, I like gadgets, too. I like the electronic baseball games and stuff like that. And I like clothes. I tell you, I like anything I get for nothing, especially if it's from fans. You know, I appreciate anything that people send me.
You're into baseball.
Yeah, I'm an Oakland A's fan.
Yeah.
And a New York Met fan. You know, the Mets are coming up, too. Boy, look out for those bastards. They're going to be on your ass.